Thank you, Sean. Good to see you yesterday at Vanderbilt Legends Club. Hey, if you want to win a pair of tickets to see the Rolling Stones, hello, at Nissan Stadium.
Hi.
That'll be Saturday, October 9th. I would like to have tickets to that. Seriously, do you have tickets to that, Chase?
I do not.
I don't either.
I've seen them twice.
See, I have not.
It's a good show. I recommend it.
Okay. Well, you've got that chance. All you have to do is head over to YouTube and subscribe to 1025 The Game's YouTube page, and you'll automatically be entered for a chance to see the Rolling Stones. One winner will be chosen on Monday, September 20th. So keep that in mind. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, presented by Curation CBD. Curation CBD, products curated for life. Mitch Light from The Athletic now joins us. Mitch, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Darren. Hope you're doing okay.
Yeah, doing fantastic. And we were just talking with Clark Lee about their big win, and now they will host Stanford. So let's just start there. Yesterday, after we were off the air, he was in his seventh year at USC. I feel like we've been hearing whispers or hot seat stuff, or they're going to replace Clay Helton for about 5 years, but he has always survived. But I guess he has not survived anymore. They lose by a couple of touchdowns at home to Stanford, who's not that great, and they have decided to part ways after two games of Clay Helton at the helm in year seven. What do you make of it?
Not a surprise. I mean, anybody who follows the sport knows that Clay Helton has not been on the most secure footing, has seemingly found ways to save his job over the years through several different athletic directors and different administrations, and some of that was helped by a inconsistent administration, at times not wanting to spend money to make a coaching change. But it's just, it was a difficult situation. You know, when you know it's inevitable, you know, I think all of us who follow the sport closely say, was he going to be the coach there next year? Probably not, barring some, you know, surprising run, Pac-12 South title or Pac-12 title. So I'm always of the opinion, if you know it's going to happen, don't prolong the inevitable. It's awkward, but I think it's, you know, some people say it's not fair to the team. I think it's not fair to the team and the players at a school like that to have to answer questions all season long about your head coach when the administration has already decided what it's going to do. I think it was the wise decision just to go ahead and do it.
So that leaves it opening. We were batting some names around earlier in the show. Luke Fickell, who's Chase and I said would be a good one. Willie brought up that Joe Rexroth this morning on our morning show brought up James Franklin. So, one, what do you think of those two candidates, and do you have one of your own you'd like to throw out there?
I think those are probably the betting favorites. I would throw out James Franklin. He would be the first one I'd throw out. I've often said and that he would kill it in recruiting out there. He does well in recruiting at Penn State. His 2022 class is great. But Penn State's a great job. I believe him when he said it was his dream job. He's a Pennsylvania native. The problem of being the head coach at Penn State right now, and it's not a James Franklin problem, it's a Ohio State problem. Your division foe is a great program in Ohio State. It's at its all-time, despite their loss last week, it's at its all-time peak in, as far as performance on the field and in recruiting. I mean, Ohio State is recruiting as well as Alabama and Georgia the last few years, and that's really hurt Penn State. Ohio State's gone into Pennsylvania and gotten some players that clearly Penn State wanted. I think you put James Franklin at USC where he is the top dog and, you know, can kind of control Southern California recruiting, and USC can also recruit nationally. I think he would do a phenomenal job out there. I think it fits his personality. I think James Franklin's happy at Penn State, loves his job, appreciates his job. Not saying he would take it, but I think USC is on the short list of ones he would consider.
Oregon didn't have Thibodeau, their stud player on defense in that game. He got hurt in their win in week one, didn't play against Ohio State. Believe it or not, they didn't need him. They still came away with the upset victory. Now they've lost five-star linebacker Justin Flo, I think that's how you say his last name, to an injury. It looks like Mario Cristobal saying he could be lost for the season. How many more hits can Oregon take on defense with their stud players, and how good is this Ducks team, in your opinion?
Yeah, well, Flo didn't play on Saturday either, so that was their two best defensive
players. Oh, so he didn't even play? I thought he got hurt. Okay.
No, he did not play, so they were at their two best players.
Jeez.
So, So that even makes the win that much more remarkable and impactful for Oregon and for the entire Pac-12. It's sort of the culmination. It was only one game, we know, but it was sort of the culmination of what Mario Cristobal has been building there. They were very physical at the line of scrimmage, and they got good enough quarterback play from Anthony Brown. Their skill guys were good. A lot of it, you know, Ryan Day and Kerry Combs, the defensive coordinator, taking a lot of heat up there at Ohio State for the way they played defense and made things sometimes look easy for Oregon, but give Oregon credit. So they clearly have, you know, established themselves as a national championship contender, playoff contender. What they need now is Ohio State to go back to being great, because no one will have a better, you know, barring someone winning in Tuscaloosa or something, no playoff caliber team is going to have a better win than going to Ohio State and winning. So that gives them maybe they slip up in Pac-12 play, you know, maybe they lose one game. They could afford to lose one game if they have that win at Ohio State in their back pocket. So you can't overstate how enormous that was for the Oregon program and the entire Pac-12.
I know this is kind of broad and it's putting you on the spot, but who's a team that we weren't talking about, or maybe you didn't envision them being very good, but they've jumped out of the gates, they're 2-0, and you're going, you know what, they're a lot better than I thought. How would you answer that?
That is a good one. Kind of surveying the landscape a little bit. Iowa, maybe. I probably fell into the trap of thinking, okay, it's just an Iowa, a typical top 20-ish Iowa team, but this might be a top 10 playoff caliber team. You know, there's a big difference, we talk about a lot, of being a national championship caliber team and a playoff caliber team. You can be a playoff caliber team and you know, be a good but not great team. To be a national championship team, you have to be elite. And I don't think Iowa's elite, but to go into, you know, they won their first game against Indiana. They beat basically – I was beaten two off-season media darling teams, Indiana and Iowa State, two teams that got a ton of respect in the off-season, and they beat them thoroughly in both games, one of them on the road. So, you know, I think Iowa's an early-season surprise.
Talking to Mitch Light from The Athletic. Mitch, you talked about the Clay Helton side of things, so the final nail is a thrashing by Stanford, who had lost their first game against Kansas State. Now we know Stanford comes to Nashville to play Vanderbilt. You gave us a good scouting report on Colorado State last week. So what's the matchup like? I noticed Stanford's an 11-point favorite at Vanderbilt, which is not a surprise coming in. But what kind of matchup are we looking at here?
Yeah, I mean, to throw out a lot of the cliches you hear with Stanford, though, you know, it's they go about it the way they have for years. They're a physical team. They haven't recruited as well at the line of scrimmage as they did 5-10 years ago, and you know, while David Shaw is highly respected, if you kind of dig deep inside the numbers, there's been a slow slippage from this program. They're no longer, you know, where they're not what they were 5-10 years ago, and you know, the Kansas State game was kind of a wake-up call for them offensively, and they played both quarterbacks there, and Jack West and Tanner McKee and McKee, and then went with McKee, obviously, against USC. And you never know in that game how much of that was Stanford and how much of it was USC just kind of falling apart. But obviously, you go into the Coliseum and score 42 points, you're doing something right. Got pretty good running backs, decent skill. Yeah, I just think the overall, you know, again, they recruit well, but they had that stretch there in the, you know, into Harbaugh earlier era, really early David Shaw, where they were signing like top 15 classes, and that hasn't been the case there. So I don't think it's going to be a team that's going to wow you with their skill, but I'm sure they're playing with a ton of confidence right now, and they've got, for the most part, you know, a veteran offensive line, a lot of guys who've played a lot of snaps in the Pac-12, and also nationally they play a national schedule. In fact, they're the only team in the nation this year that's playing 12 Power 5 opponents. Their non-conference is Kansas State, Vanderbilt, and Notre Dame.
Wow. Interesting note there. So great challenge to see what Vanderbilt comes back with after getting that win. Now, a program that desperately needed a jumpstart type of win was Arkansas, and they got it emphatically against Texas. What do you think that means for Arkansas going forward this year? Are they maybe ahead of schedule here?
They're an interesting case study, because last year they were talked about, you know, program media darling. A lot of people jumped on the bandwagon early with them, and Sam Pittman clearly did a great job there, and you know, they got they were victimized by a bad call in the Auburn game. They could have won that game. but it's still a team that only went 3-7. He took over, and I say this all the time, you know, give Sam Pittman and SF credit, but also took over a talented roster. Like Chad Morris, the previous staff, just they were horrendous, but they did a decent job in recruiting. It was a top 25 roster nationally. So if you can come in with a new staff and you kind of everyone buys into the message and they ended up having the right quarterback in Felipe Franks last year, and you get the right guys maybe like on the lines of scrimmage in the quarterback position, you can overachieve, and that's kind of what they did. They elected to go with K.J. Jefferson this year, a young quarterback. We had a story in The Athletic about David Ubben did about how they opted not to hit the transfer portal. They had faith in K.J. Jefferson, and so far it's paid off. You know, like I said before, they recruited well at the at the skill positions. They've got good wide receivers. So, just a monumental win for Arkansas. But then you step back and you look at them, and you know, where are they on the food chain in the SEC West? Like, who are they better than? Are they better than Mississippi State? Are they better than Auburn? I don't know. This team could still finish sixth or maybe seventh in the SEC West. Now, that doesn't mean they're not making strides and they're not, you know, on the right path and all that. It just kind of tells you how difficult life can be specifically nowadays in the SEC West, where there's really no bad program.
It's such a great – it's such a indicator of how far ahead Alabama is than virtually anybody else. They're going to Florida, who's got high expectations, and they're favored by over 2 touchdowns. Is there any chance that Florida can make a statement just by taking the game into the fourth quarter and having a chance?
Well, I remember the team that probably played Alabama the best last year, maybe other than Ole Miss, was maybe, I think probably better than Ole Miss, was Florida in the SEC championship game. Now, they don't have Kyle Trask, they don't have Kyle Pitts, so that's going to be, but that was a neutral site game. This is the home game. I'm really interested to see what goes on with the quarterback position at Florida. You know, Emory Jones is a rare bird nowadays, where he's a guy who just highly recruited quarterback who was patient and stuck it out at his school and didn't transfer. He's a fourth-year junior who's starting for the first time this year, and they said all the great things about him in the offseason. And I haven't seen much of Florida play this year, but those who follow it and what I read about, it sounds like Anthony Richardson, the redshirt freshman, has played, not a lot, but has played better. Dan Mullen has maintained he's going to play both quarterbacks, but like, what happens if Richardson plays better this week? Is he going to be the starter going forward? So that's kind of an underlying storyline there. And also, like you said, can they keep it close? You know, that's sort of like what I guess people are talking about. I don't want to say it's been the quiet thing about the first 2 weeks, just how much better, especially with Ohio State struggling, how much better is Alabama than everybody else? And that's, if they go into Gainesville and they win this game by 21, 28 points, it's like what everyone else is playing for second in the SEC, and maybe they're playing for second nationally because they've been an absolute machine so far.
Talking to Mitch Light of The Athletic. So how concerned should Notre Dame fans be right now, even though their team sits at 2-0? They survived against Florida State. They survived against Toledo, but you know, certainly not clicking on all cylinders, so to speak, right now.
Yeah, clearly, Chase. I mean, not, you know, we do this all the time, and that's what we do as college football fans and in media. We compare scores because that's what you can. That's really the only thing you can do. So you watch that Notre Dame Florida State game, and you're like, okay, that's a good win. Florida State looks like they've improved a lot, and then Florida State loses to a Jacksonville State team that got shut out by UAB. So what does that do for Notre Dame, who just, you know, had to eke out a win against Toledo? So not great. Just talking about the quarterback situation at Florida, Jack Cohn has played well so far. You know, Tyler Buckner, the freshman from San Diego, will he kind of elbow his way into the mix at all? We know they're good at running back in tight end. Defensively, they've been giving up a lot of big plays. You know, that stat's been floating around. Pete Sampson, who covers Notre Dame for The Athletic, something like, I don't have the number, but Notre Dame this year, through 2 games, have given up more plays of X yards, like 50-plus yards, than they did in 3 years under Clark Lee. So Marcus Freeman plays more of a, you know, risk-reward type defense. They're going to take some gambles, but you're going to give up some big plays. We saw that in the Florida State game. We saw that in the Toledo game. So, you know, the good thing is they're 2-0. The bad thing is they had to eke out wins over two. You know, Toledo's a good team, no doubt, but it's not like they're playing top 10, top 15 teams. So, you know, obviously, we'll see what they got. A big one against Wisconsin a couple weeks, and then a huge one October 2nd against Cincinnati.
Yeah, that one's going to be a lot of fun. Ole Miss plays Tulane this week, and then they have a stretch of four, and you can even say five games: Alabama, Arkansas, Tennessee, LSU, and then out of that, they will play at Auburn. But those four games specifically, because you got teams kind of all over the place with Alabama at the top, what do you think the Rebels look like at the end of that stretch?
Yeah, I think the Tulane game's going to be fun. I mean, if you watched any of that Oklahoma game, Tulane's got a fun offense. I've been a big Willie Fritz fan for years. Danny back to his Georgia Southern days, runs a kind of a fun offense, a lot of option elements involved there, and they're always, you know, just very, very well prepared, and he's just one of the more underrated coaches nationally. Do I expect them to beat Ole Miss to be Tulane? Yeah, but that one could be fun there. I don't know. Ole Miss could be, you know, they look great against Louisville. And how good is Louisville? We don't know, but they obviously showed major defensive improvements. You know, I think they've got is it too bold to say they got a chance to go 4-1 during that stretch, lose to Alabama? I wouldn't be shocked if they go 4-1 during that. The LSU game's at home. They'll very good chance they'll be favored against Arkansas. Very good chance they'll be favored in Knoxville. And if they beat LSU, they could be favored at Auburn. So that could be a defining stretch for future USC head coach Lane Kiffin.
You had to throw that in there. Yes, you did. Yes, you did.
He can have another press conference with him and his SID.
So does he get hired on the tarmac instead of getting fired on the tarmac?
I think there would need to be a ceremony.
Humor, that would be amazing. Press conference on the tarmac. It's crazy that, like, if Lane Kiffin had never been the head coach of USC, he might be the favorite to be that USC head coach, the next USC head coach right now.
But along those lines, I'm not saying he's going to go back to USC, but is he going to be the beneficiary of the coaching carousel? Like, if, let's just play the scenario of, you know, James Franklin is moving around, and then you have other jobs that are going to open up later in the season. I mean, Lane's name's going to be out there, is it not?
Sure. And I've come full circle on him. Like, he clearly has matured. Like, he still likes to have fun, and he's a funny dude. Social media, he gets it and all that stuff. But, like, 5 years ago, I, you know, would have rolled my eyes if you said Lane Kiffin's going to be back in the Power Five. And I was like, this guy, he clearly, you know, he's loose cannon and all that stuff. But, you know, he's done a tremendous job at Ole Miss. They clearly have a fun offense. Got a great offensive coordinator. So I would... You know, is he a fit everywhere? I mean, I don't see Lane Kiffin at Penn State. I don't know why not, but, you know, it just doesn't seem to be a fit there. But if the fit was there, and I were a Power 5 AD, I would clearly look at Lane Kiffin for the job he's done at Ole Miss.
So in power rankings of these SEC retreads, if you want to call them that, Gus Malzahn, Lane Kiffin, Hugh Freeze. How would you answer that as being sought after, so to speak?
Good question. I think the order you said it, Kiffin, Malzahn. I still think Hugh Freeze is too much damaged goods right now. You know, I think he would have been a stronger candidate for some SEC jobs more recently had that not been the case. I think I've always been a Gus Malzahn fan. Interesting to see what he does this year offensively, because his offenses were not great at Auburn last, you know, few years there, but I think he's in a perfect fit. I think he is a perfect fit at UCF, especially now they're joining the Big 12. I think their recruiting will probably be elevated just a bit there, and obviously a ton of skill guys in Central Florida. I think they're going to be good offensively under him. It's just how good can they be defensively. But those are three guys that for various reasons have all, you know, been very successful and then had setbacks. But if you can coach football and if you're good offensive mind, you're going to find a job. And all three of those guys right now are head coaches.
Well, Mitch, appreciate the time as always. We will do it again next week.
All right. Take care, guys. See ya.
He is Mitch Light of The Athletic. Joins us every Tuesday after Coach Lee around 1:20 or so. We'll come back, wrap up the show. But first, Willie, tell us about loans.
Going to be a fun 1-2 punch talking some college football during this day, this time with Coach Lee and then Mitch. What is it, the Light After Lee?
Yes.
Light After Lee, yeah. We're going to go with that. We'll see if it just has that natural stick-em.
We'll see if it sticks. If it doesn't,
takes a couple
then,
weeks,
you know, we'll
yeah.
move on.
It'll take a few weeks to kind of feel it out there. But a lot of fun college football games coming up this weekend. Meanwhile, Loan Pronto, as I've been telling you, we know the mortgage rates have taken the nosedive, and that means opportunity for you. Also, your home's value. If you live in this listening area, you know it's very likely your home value is high right now. Take advantage. You need some cash right now for maybe some different needs. Maybe it's to consolidate some debt. Maybe it's to pay off that credit card bill that you have. Maybe you want to do a home improvement project that you've been wanting to reinvest in your home, upgrade, make your house even more valuable. Well, Loan Pronto can help you with that. They can get cash out of your home's equity, and they can do it with a really good streamlined process. It's fast. It's easy. It's all digital, virtually no paperwork required, and most of the loans get closed in 14 days. So if you act right now, you can be on track to getting that project done in your home or getting those bills paid that you need to pay right now. So call Loan Pronto. Don't wait any longer. Start the process before the rates go back up again and you don't take advantage of the opportunity that's in front of you. 615-499-5780 for Loan Pronto. That's 615-499-5780 or go to the website at loanpronto.com. If your current mortgage rate starts with a 3, you need to act now. 615-499-5780 or loanpronto.com. Equal housing lender.
NMLS 1661781, subject to lender approval. Not all loans eligible for zero cost option.